This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we invite you to rise and please sing as John Kiley plays our national anthem.
The late John Updike famously described Fenway Park as a lyric little bandbox of a ballpark. He called it a compromise between man's Euclidean determinations and nature's beguiling irregularities. He was referring, of course, to the old ballpark's quirks. One of the deepest right fields in the American League, the shortest left field. And, of course, the big green monster rising 37 feet high like the battered side of a hulking ship.
However you describe it, Fenway Park is 100 years old today, the oldest major league ballpark in the country. And because of that century-long history, it's a source of countless memories for baseball fans everywhere, especially here in Boston and around New England. So we're going to ask you to share your favorite memories of Fenway today.
So as Fenway celebrates 100 years, give us a call, 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Or post it on RadioBoston.org or Facebook or Twitter at Radio Boston. And we're joined now by a couple of great writers who've been following sports in this city and region for a long time. John Powers is with the Boston Globe. He's co-author, along with Ron Driscoll, of Fenway Park, a salute to the coolest, cruelest, longest-running Major League Baseball stadium in America. And John, great to have you.
Lovely to be here. It's amazing. The ballpark outlived the Titanic by 100 years exactly.
Well, that title says it all. Cruelest, longest, coolest. Also with us, our old friend, host of NPR's Only a Game, Bill Littlefield. Hey, Bill.
Hello, Anthony.
Glad to have you here as well.
It's just great to be here, as always.
Listen, John, let me start with you. Before we talk about some of these great memories and the not-so-great memories, putting all the sentimentality aside, this is really something that this park has survived for all these years. 100 years of baseball in the same setting, on the same field. What's the significance of that?
Well, you know, and what's interesting about this city is how many other cities have two state houses, two city halls, two Hancock buildings. I think even if we hadn't gotten a new ballpark, they would have kept this thing around.
<That's> probably...
What is extraordinary is how many people go through it off-season.
Yeah.
People tour this place like it is the Paul Revere House.
Well, so I was struck by that yesterday. The Sox had an open house, and I went down there. And, of course, I expected a lot of interest, but there were thousands of people there in the middle of a work day. Just an opportunity to walk through the empty park. Incredible.
Well, I think most of them wanted to get inside the wall to see where Manny went to the bathroom.
Well, I think it's also partly because for so many years, Joe Mooney wouldn't let anybody on the field.
That's right.
Remind us who Joe Mooney was.
The groundskeeper who was so fiercely protective of his turf. Everything has changed with the current administration of the team, wouldn't you say, John?
Yeah, well, and you know, one of the interesting things is that the previous administration was trying to sell the idea that Fenway basically was a doomed ballpark and should be knocked down.
They built that model of a new park.
Absolutely.
And they took people on tours of the underside of the stadium and virtually required them to wear hard hats in case some large piece of steel might fall on them.
That's
well,
right.
Well, so let me ask you about that, because I thought that was an interesting time when the old ownership, and of course they've been pilloried for what they wanted to do. They wanted to tear down Fenway Park. But let me take a contrarian position. Why wasn't that a good idea? I mean, I know we love Fenway. We love the history. But it's got terrible sight lines, lots of obstructed seats. They were going to build a sort of Camden Yard-style park still in the city. Not a bad idea.
You make an excellent point.
Yeah.
The assertion that Boston needed a new ballpark came along as people were recognizing that a place like Camden Yards was a dandy place to see a baseball game.
What do you think, John Powers?
You know, it wouldn't have been a terrible thing, but the new ownership, a relatively new ownership, mm-hmm. simply chose to go the other way, and most people are delighted that they did.
Well, also, I think back then there was talk, we can do this thing on the South Boston waterfront, and there was talk, well, let's do it in or around the site. The problem is now, unlike in 1912, you have dozens of abutters around there. It would be a nightmare to try to build that park any place but where it is. And going over to Southie, it would be hard to get transportation, and you have issues there. So I think one thing happened when the new ownership paid that much for the ball club. They didn't have the option of building a ballpark, too.
Well, it's there, and there's a lot of reasons to be happy that it survived 100 years. So let's talk about some memories. It seems like there are a couple of kinds of memories here. There are the personal experiences that individuals can recall about things that happened to them at the park. Then, of course, there are the great games, and that has to include Game 6 of the 1975 World Series, score tied, bottom of the 10th inning, Carlton Fisk at the plate.
There it goes, a long drive. If it stays fair, home run. Lot of body English for Carlton Fisk. Watch it. How many steps does he take? One, he waits to see it. Get over.
Anyway, a lot of body English. We all remember that's one of the iconic images and great memories of Fenway Park. John Powers, do you remember where you were when Carlton Fisk hit that home run?
It was funny. I was on the road doing something else. But what is interesting is you ask any Bostonian, they'll tell you they lost the seventh game. They'll lead through the leafest pitch. They never should have taken out Willoughby. So I think one of the funny things about doing this book was trying to find wonderful moments that had actually happened there. There weren't that many.
Well, there were wonderful moments, but they were always trumped by what happened right afterwards.
Right afterwards.
That was the problem.
All right, here's another one, which at least a few of our listeners should recall. September 28th, 1960. The great Ted Williams at bat for what was believed to be at that point his last major league at bat.
1-1 to Williams. Everybody quiet now here at Fenway Park after they gave him a standing ovation of 2 minutes, knowing that this is probably his last time at bat. One out, nobody on, last of the eighth inning. Jack Fisher into his windup. Here's the pitch. Williams swings, and there's a long drive to deep right. That ball is going, and it is gone. A home run for Williams in his last time at bat in the major league.
So I'm amazed by that. I grew up hearing my father talk about that moment as sort of a commentary about leave when you're on top. Mm. Don't sort of wither away and let your great game dwindle. That was something, wasn't it?
I think the most amazing thing about that moment is that there were 4,872,000 people in Fenway Park that day.
That's right.
It's all people who will tell you they were there.
Everyone saw it. Well, and plus, it wasn't on a weekend. It was lousy weather.
Right.
It was a bad ball club, and Ted didn't want to go down to New York because that series didn't matter.
Listeners, we're talking about Fenway Park, 100 years old. We're asking for your favorite memories. Give us a call at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. John Powers of the Boston Globe, Only Games. Bill Littlefield is here with us. Let's take a call. Philip is calling from Wayland. Hi, Philip.
Hi, thank you very much. I have two memories that I wanted to share with you.
Sure, go ahead.
One is personal, one's baseball. The first one I wanted to tell you was baseball. As I was sitting here thinking about baseball, I was at a doubleheader in 1967. The Red Sox played the Angels. And in the first game, they beat the Angels 12-2, I think. And then they took a break. And in the second game, the Red Sox came back from 8-0 and beat the Angels, I think, 10-9 on a Jerry Adair home run. That was the 67 team. But the personal memory I wanted to share with you is from when I was a young boy. I'm 59 years old. When I was 10, I was at the ballpark with some friends. Father took us there for a birthday party. There was about a dozen of us. And we sat in the right field bleachers, and after the game, as the crowd ushered out, I got lost, and I got separated from the crowd. And so in those days, it wasn't always friendly Fenway. You know, the ushers weren't the friendliest guys. They're not like they are today, trained and personable. It was less than friendly Fenway. So this was probably 1962. I was in the runway with a crowd of people, lost, disconnected, and I didn't know what to do. So I had the wherewithal to look for an usher, and I found an usher with those red usher jackets, and I tugged on his sleeve, and I said, "Hey, mister, I'm lost. I don't know where my people are. I don't know how to get home." And I was near panic, and because I'm a suburban kid. And the usher looked down at me, and in typical non-friendly Fenway style, he said, "Take the train home, kid."
Philip, we appreciate that call. Thanks for that memory. Yeah, I think today that might be a little different. John Powers, what about your favorite memory? You covered this game, this story, for a long, long time.
Well, the funny thing was the time that the Sox got my brother and me in trouble. It was 1961. It was Yaz's first year, the year after Ted. And they were not a good ball club. And we went to see a Sunday doubleheader, which you could for, I think, about 50 cents. They're playing the last place Senators. Not many of us there. They are down 12-5, two out in the ninth inning, and they come back and win 13-12.
Mm.
Then the second game, the nightcap goes 13 innings. We got home at 8 o'clock, and we were in deep trouble. I said, my father said, where were you? He said, we were at Fenway watching the Sox. he said, what are you talking about? No, they made this amazing comeback. He wouldn't believe us until he picked up the paper the next day to see, A, they'd actually won a doubleheader. And I think at that time, and maybe still, it was the greatest comeback that the Sox had ever made. What's stunning is, though, you could do that for 50 cents. And kids, I think I was 12, and my brother was 9. Your parents set you off with a nickel and a dollar to get in the ballpark and have some popcorn, and that was it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was talking to some people who were recalling watching Red Sox baseball back in the 1950s yesterday at the open house in Fenway, and they were recalling 10 cents got you in for a game, I think, mm-hmm. in 1948 or something like that, which, of course, was worth a little more then, but still it was only 10 cents.
Then, of course, there were the years when the Red Sox would pay you to come to the game.
Bill, what about your favorite memory?
I have a memory package.
All right, go.
I moved up here in 1972, and I grew up near New York City, so I was a National League fan. I rooted for the old New York Giants and continued to root for them after they moved to San Francisco. So what should I find when I moved to Boston in the early 70s but Orlando Cepeda and shortly thereafter Juan Marichal and calling games for the radio Jim Woods, who called games for the old New York Giants,
oh.
and said he was darned if he'd moved to San Francisco with him, stayed on the East Coast. I want to combine that with a doubleheader I saw in 1974. I have no idea who won either of the games. I couldn't tell you the date, but Juan Marichal pitched Game 1 and Louis Tiant pitched Game 2. And if there ever was a better 1-2 punch on a pitching staff than Juan Marichal and Louis Tiant, I want to hear about it from somebody because it was a great day as far as I was concerned.
That's fantastic. I remember being at Game 1 in 1975, the Red Sox in the World Series against the Cincinnati Reds, and Louis Tiant was pitching.
Mm-hmm.
And he got a base hit, and it was terrific to watch because, of course, he was a dazzling pitcher, but he wasn't much of a hitter.
He wasn't much of a base runner either.
That was the problem. He could actually hit, and that was the story that I remember. And he rounded first base, and he hooked to the left, which, of course, means he's in play. And all of Fenway sort of said, Get back to the base. And you could hear this sort of stadium-wide sigh of relief when he beat the throw back to first base after almost getting a hit. Anyway, he was a treasure of Red Sox history. Let's take a couple more calls. Joe is calling from Indianapolis, Indiana. I don't believe it. Are you listening to us online, Joe?
Yeah, I was.
Well, that's terrific. Give us your memory.
So, favorite memory from Fenway. I used to go to a lot of Sox games with my dad when I was a little kid, and I was probably about 5 years old. And I'm walking through one of the tunnels, going down to get a hot dog or something like that. And an older guy, must have been 80 years old, says, hey, kid, you forgot your hat. And he gives me a brand new Sox hat. And I had no clue what he was talking about. Kind of looked up at my dad and took a good long time to figure out that this stranger was just giving me a present.
That's nice.
Get to the game without a hat. Here you go, kid. And it was just amazing.
That kind of makes up for the Usher story.
That does make up for the Usher story. That's great. Well, as we know, the Red Sox have a long, proud history of losing. And so Fenway memories have to include some real heartbreakers. In fact, John Powers, you were saying there's a lot of sort of bad news to recall. So here's one from 1978, an unusual one-game playoff to determine the American League pennant between the Red Sox and the Yankees. The Red Sox are leading, and the light-hitting Yankee shortstop Bucky Dent comes to the plate.
Hit high in the air to left field, going to the corner, Yastrzemski. It's over the wall. It's a home run for Bucky Dent. Yankees get the lead 3-2, and it just clears the outfield.
The Yankees now take the lead by a score of 3-2, and the Red Sox fans are stunned here at Fenway.
So that's the first time I heard the wall giveth and the wall taketh away. It certainly gave a lot to the Yankees there, John Powers, right?
And of course, that man to this day in this town is known as Bucky Bleeping Dent. Mm-hmm.
That's right, yeah.
And not only that, in the ballpark that he built,
yep.
right, known as a Yankee, of course, he puts the wall in the ballpark so that he can put the score of the game after he hit that fly ball over it on the scoreboard of the ballpark he built.
That's Bill Littlefield. We're here with John Powers of the Boston Globe as well. We're talking about your favorite memories at Fenway Park. You can join the conversation, 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Let's go to Carolina from Dorchester. Hi, Carolina.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Happy to do it.
My favorite memory was from when I was about 7 or 8 years old, and what I remember was a beautiful snowy day, and I was looking down on the field, and what I was seeing was helmets that were white with red, white, and blue, and it was the Boston Patriots.
That's right, Fenway Park for a brief period, right, John, is where the old Patriots team played.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I remember going with my brother sitting in the bleachers and kicking, catching extra points kicked by Gino Cappelletti because they went end-to-end.
That's amazing. Your book, by the way, John, this book, I want to say it's beautiful, this book by you and Ron Driscoll, Fenway Park, A Salute to the Coolest, Cruelest, Longest-Running Major League Baseball Stadium in America. You talk about sort of the many other events that Fenway has staged over the years besides Red Sox games.
Right. Actually, it was our outdoor gathering place in many ways. Not only did all of the pro football teams play there, college teams played. That's where BC played. BU played there. We had lacrosse. All of the soccer teams played there. In terms of rallies, political rallies, FDR gave the last political speech of his life there. Eamon de Valera gave a rally for the Irish Free State. Concerts. One thing people of my age in Boston, the mayor's charity field day was held there. I saw Spanky and our gang at Fenway Park.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's great. Let's take another call. Martha is calling from Devens. Hi, Martha.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. My event dates from early 1980s. I have a manufacturing business, and I got a call one day from, I think his name is Mr. Harrington, president of the Red Sox, who said that his family buys our product, which is a college-related product, and he wondered if we would make a Red Sox mirror. Actually, it was a mirror with a little painting on it, and could I do that? And I said, I certainly could, of course. And he said, well, I'd like you to come in and take a chip off the Green Monster because I want to make sure that the color paint on the Green Monster that you do matches. I said, I'll be there. And I went in, and I was accompanied by the landscaper of the park, and he walked me one-to-one across the field, and I think it was the highest point of my life at the time. I was stunned and went over, took a chip off, and went back, and he also took me on a tour of the inner circle of the administrative offices of the Red Sox, went back, and we produced a painting of the Red Sox, which to this day, X number of years later, we still produce. And it was quite an event. Actually, I had my son deliver the order, and my son never took my business seriously because he was a teenager. But when he walked into the Fenway administrative offices, it ended. He was very, very pleased.
He had new respect for his mother, no doubt.
Exactly. There it is. And I've had a nice relationship with the MLB ever since then.
Well, Martha, thanks so much for calling in and giving us that story. We appreciate it. Let's go to Alexa, who's calling from Newton. Hi, Alexa.
Hi.
Tell us your story. And let me start by asking you how old you are, first of all.
I'm 10 years old.
So you're a relatively new Red Sox fan. Tell us your story.
Well, I was once at a Red Sox game last summer, and there were lots of foul balls in that certain game, and I would run up every single time. But the ball boy, I remember exactly what he looked like. He had red hair and glasses, and he would never give the ball to me.
He would not give the ball to you? Right.
No, he never would. And then later that summer, I was, like, touring Fenway Park with my father, and he came up to me, the ball boy, and he apologized to me for not giving me a ball, and he gave me a ball from the very game.
I'm glad to hear that, Alexa, and I'm really, really happy you called in with that story. Thank you so much. So, gentlemen, I think this balance between the unfriendly and friendly Fenway Park is teetering slightly toward the Fenway,
I would say it has swung overwhelmingly toward the they're giving away things at Fenway Park.
That's amazing.
Baseballs and hats. It's wonderful.
Question for both of you. Let me start with you, John Powers. 100 years of Fenway Park. We started this conversation about the debate and the discussion about whether the park should have been rebuilt a while back. Obviously, it's not going to last another 100 years. How much longer do you think this park is going to be at the center of the city and baseball in Boston?
Well, my guess is you'd probably get another 20 or 30 years out of it. I mean, one of the things now is you look at more cities than not are moving the ballpark's back downtown. They like that kind of feel to it. And also, you don't want very big places. If Fenway were seating 55, 60, they would not be selling games out. I mean, one of the reasons why they've had that sellout is the tickets were deemed to be fairly scarce. It was not a big ballpark. It's still, with all the new thousands of seats, it was only about 38. So I think there's a sense, keep it around. What is very telling about this play, you pour all this money into renovations, you still keep a manual scoreboard.
Mm.
Why do you do that?
Bill Littlefield, concluding quick parting thought about Fenway at 100.
Well, I think it's a marvel and it's a wonder, and it's also a cash cow for the organization. I mean, they sell tours when the Red Sox are on the road, and I would think it would be around as long as the designers and the architects and the builders can figure out how to keep it standing.
Only a Game's Bill Littlefield, John Powers of the Boston Globe, thank you guys both for coming in. We appreciate it.
A pleasure.
Thank you.
3-0 Yankees today at Fenway Park, bottom of the second.
Don't give up hope. Red Sox Radio Boston is a production of WBUR with regular contributions from theangleatboston.com. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
I'm Anthony Brooks. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.